This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Remarkable Results Radio, Carm Capriotto. 10 years in it now. Thank you for your loyal listenership. So appreciated. We are excited to have a great episode on process today. And boy, I've got a great guest. David Boyd's going to be with us. He's a Six Sigma Black Belt. Yes, and he's going to take me on halfway through the episode. Only kidding. Hey, look, we appreciate you as a dedicated listener, as I said. And remember, listen to learn just one thing, but don't forget, I need you to implement any new ideas that you take away from our podcast and for all the great episodes on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Look, Breaks for Breast is coming up in October again of this year. Every October doesn't mean that you can't participate in Breaks for Breast every month of the year. We have a really great new episode coming out real soon. One of the best we've done in all these years that we have been supporting Breaks for Breasts. The breast cancer research vaccine out of the Cleveland Clinic. $2+ million have been earned over the last 11 years that they've been doing this. So you have really made a difference. And before we get started, great word from our great sponsors. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop, and NAPA Trax will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, welcome back. Hey, David Boyd.
Hello, Carm.
How are you, my friend?
No, it's fine. I was just thinking about the idea of doing our black belt sparring around process halfway through the show. We'll have to.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Have to go into the octagon.
we're going to do that. David's with Inbound, callinbound.com. Coolest phone system in the world. They're a dedicated, high-performing, independent shop owner service. Everything for the independent shop owner. And a lot of times I walk into shops and I see the Inbound phone systems. So I know you're everywhere. But you also have to do some AI-powered call analysis and stuff. And I just love it. I haven't had a chance to see it handle spam control on the phones. And anyway, so here's my think on today's episode. When, and I'm connected to the industry, my ear's always to the ground. I know a ton of friends. They just call me and says, hey, idea, what about this? A lot going on. So the top things, David, that I continue to feel, I mean, in this moment of time right now, culture, it goes without saying, being a client advocate education, or as they say, customer service education, scaling, financial, recruiting and retention, but way up on top of the list is processes and systems and policy, way up. And so many coaches that I talked to that said, when we can tweak some of the financial things that are critical in the business, but what we find out is there's no methodology, no way of doing things, no consistency. The processes are broken. And it looks to me, when I talk to people, it says, we don't know how to start. We tried and then we failed and we never really had the discipline to go forward and keep doing it. Well, when I found out that David is a Six Sigma in processes and systems, I said, come on, and maybe you can help the shop owner move forward in, if you will, process engineering. I love that word, by the way, engineering, process engineering. So what the hell is it, and what's Six Sigma? So let's get going.
Six Sigma is a process methodology, and it is designed around understanding first how we work, and then being able to measure that. Once we understand the process and can measure the process, going through a structure of improvement and control. So there's some terminology that we use. Just a quick note about my background. I grew up in corporate America and I became a Six Sigma Master Black Belt at GE. I worked for a number of years in corporate America in process engineering. So I became passionate about process. And it's funny because, as you mentioned, process is overlooked often. It can be even taboo to say, hey, what's your process for this? It sounds more like a check and balance as we're running a shop. What's your process? Do you have a standard process defined? What's your SOP? We hear some of these buzzwords. Process is actually quite simple because everything we do is a process. So when I'm talking about process, I like to just break it down to the simplest level, which is whatever we're doing, we're following a process, whether we know it or not. So if we can just acknowledge that, yes, we have a process for this, then we can know it, document it, and prove it.
But David, could it be the process of the day? Because it didn't work like this yesterday, so today we're going to do it a little different, and then tomorrow may have a different flavor.
It's a great point, Karim, because rapid toggling of process execution can be really problematic because then the process is variable. So if our process is whatever the flavor of the day happens to be, whatever's quickest or feels right, then it is an out of control process.
I love those two words, rapid toggling. I think I'm broke. Well, you're rapid toggling. Chikung, chikung, chikung. To my listener, think about it. If you can put that in your head, rapid toggling, that's what's broke.
I don't know if this is skipping ahead in our discussion, but you know, when we talk about this, I tend to interact on a process level, which is just the way that my mind works. When I'm talking, I'm always evaluating why is something happening in a particular way. So when I have a conversation with anybody that owns a business or, you know, lives life or my kids or whatever, I'm always thinking about what's the process. So I ask questions like, why do you do that? Why do you do it that way? And I'm always listening, Karim, for two key responses to tell me that I don't know. If somebody says, why do you do that? I don't know. Then we all agree we have a problem. But I'm always listening when I'm talking about the way that we do what we do. And I'm asking, why do you do it that way? And when somebody says, that's how I was taught, or that's the way we've always done it. Now we have a basis for discussion, a process discussion, and it doesn't have to be hard or gross. We can just simply talk about the way that something happens in our daily. So whether it's business or life, we'll talk probably today about, you know, in the context of the shop and why we do certain things the way we do that. But it's important for your listener to understand, do we know why we're doing something? Because we all do stuff and we're executing process all throughout the day, whether it's the process of the day or whether it's something that we do routinely. Do we know why we're doing it? And ultimately, what's the outcome?
I believe there's a lot of shops that do things really, really well.
That's true.
But it's never been documented and it's never been laid as the law of the land. It's just next generation, next iteration of a new specialist in the, here's how we do this. Oh, okay. Teach it to me. Boom, boom, boom. Done. But there's no why we do it. Because, oh, the outcome at the end and the QC thing, and it's really solving the customer's problem is, oh my God, it works. But there's other things in the business that don't work. And so, you know what I love about this that just hit me? If we've got a great process or system, we can build off the fact that that thing works. Let's quickly document it. Maybe one page, 1.5 pages of why we do this. There's got to be a how we do this, right? Why we do this up top, how we do this down below. And now saying, this thing is inconsistent. We're rapid toggling over here. Let's get together as a team and pull it together. Do you recommend that people that are on the team that have a responsibility to this process be involved in it?
Very much so. What you're talking about is part one of a process methodology. So in Six Sigma, there's an acronym called DMAIC, D-M-A-I-C, define, measure, analyze, improve, control. What you've just said is really the define phase of the process analysis. So defining that process is talking with the stakeholders. In process engineering, we would call those people stakeholders. We would understand the supplier to a process and the customer of a process, and we're going to document through what are we doing and how are we doing it. So it's very much bringing those people together. It could be your service advisor, it could be a technician, it could be an office manager, but there are people that are involved in that process execution, and it's important to have them part of this as you're identifying or documenting what the process is. You cannot effectively document the process without having the key contributors and stakeholders involved.
In a typical shop, how long? I guess if, well, here's the process on how we double check tire rotation, lug nuts, something on that order. And it starts to get, oh, then you put this thing and then you put the tool back. And can you get too granular?
You can. I think an important perspective is knowing what is normal. So when we document a process, we want to define what we're doing today so that we can effectively establish normal. And once we know what normal is, now we can identify abnormal. And this is the key that I think goes sideways in a lot of businesses and a lot of shops, is that we don't know what normal is, so we don't know what abnormal is.
The big takeaway from this is establish normal. It's the commitment of the business, the owner, the commitment to the customer. This is how we do what we do, why we do what we do. Let's list it. And that's normal for this particular process. That's the rapid toggling. You're going from abnormal to normal. But you don't know that normal is really right.
That's true. The way that we've done something may be a defect. That's another process term that we use in Six Sigma, is defect. So we want to be able to identify defects. And that's just another way to say, how do we identify abnormal? This does not have to be an overwhelming, laborious process. We don't have to bring the think tank together and, you know, have hours and hours of meetings. We just simply start at the beginning and pull in the people that are involved in a process. It could be appointment setting in your shop. What's our process? It could be sales estimates. What's our process? It could be, you know, the vehicle check in or check out. What is the process? If we can have the people involved in that, we can document what we're doing. And now everybody that's involved in that process knows why we're doing it. I think in the shop, a lot of these things are going to be based on the why is operational efficiency and customer experience. We want to do an effective vehicle checkout process so that our customer has, you know, a high level experience every time they interact with us. It's not variable. When they call to set the appointment, we understand what we're trying to accomplish to maximize my customer's experience. In this case, the customer is the customer of the process. In another instance, we may have an internal process where maybe the technician is the customer of the process and the service advisor is the supplier to that process. So we need to understand what are the ins and the outs and just have that documented so that we understand normally what are we looking to accomplish? How do we execute this? We use a variety of technologies in the shop, as you well know. And some of these technologies help facilitate our workflow and some can inhibit our workflow if we're not careful.
So David, I love the customer-supplier connection or responsibility. To me, I think that's a huge part of this episode to realize when you're going to analyze, find the why and do the how is who's the customer, who's the supplier of the process. Love that piece. We have done episodes on Lean before and Lean is Six Sigma, am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. Lean, being lean. And one episode that we did, and I do believe it was Christy Hudson, mapped out an oil change and the steps that it took to do an oil change. Get the oil filter, get the oil, drag this over here, bring in the vehicle, check this out, do the DVR, all this stuff. And it looked like a spaghetti map. And what they ultimately started to figure out was they needed to move equipment around to minimize the steps. And so you could sit here, we can have this show on process, get it down, make it right, build consistency. But there's also, where are the tools? I walked into a friend's shop. He's got a battery charger at every bay. And I said, Jim, why? And he said, we did a lean analysis of every time we needed to go and get a battery charger and where it was stored in the back room and how many steps we had to take and come back. So there's a lot of people out there realizing that you can have a great process policy. We do this before we do that, and then we do this. And then if not, there's an ABC choice, boom, bum, bum. But he's got timers on every lift. It's amazing how some people get not only good policy procedure, but they get really good placement of material, tools, equipment.
You asked the number one question at the start of that story, which is with the charger at every station, why? why is that piece of equipment there or why is that piece of equipment not there? If you understand what you're doing and you can answer that question as an owner, I love the fact that the owner was immediately able to answer the why question. Why do you have that there? Well, we had some extra money in the budget. We thought, hey, we'll have a check. No, that's not the why. The why is because it drives efficiency. So when we know what we're doing and we can answer the question of why we're doing it, now we can identify what is the most efficient or effective way to do that. Placement of the technician's toolbox, the way that they are moving from point to point and starting and stopping various jobs. Are we waiting on parts? And where the parts are delivered, how is the technician notified? Again, it can sound overwhelming, and I don't mean to make this a big jumbled mess of spaghetti carm, but when we have a why questioning outlook in the shop, now we can begin to drive greater efficiency because we're actually asking the process question. Why is a process question? And when we ask why and I don't have an answer, now we have an opportunity to educate. Maybe it's maybe educating a technician or a service advisor. When we do have the answer, we can ask when we're doing it this way, you know, what gets in the way? What are the roadblocks? What are the bottlenecks? You know, the owner of the process is generally the shop owner, maybe a production manager or a shop manager, something of this sort. But everybody is part of the process. So anybody who's touching something can be a contributor. So this isn't a hat that I put on and say, hey, I'm the process guy today. Because if we're looking out and understanding, there's always an opportunity to improve. Do I know what we're doing? Do I know why we're doing it? And then can I measure what's happening throughout the execution of my work? Now we have the basis for really driving efficiency.
EVs and other high voltage vehicles are changing the automotive landscape. Is your shop ready? With more than 16% of these light-duty vehicles on the road, you will have many opportunities to service them, but you must do safely and properly. Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. Each topic starts with intensive classroom training followed by in-depth, hands-on practice, and students are tested on the knowledge they gained in the classroom. Technicians will learn on various hybrid and EV vehicles such as Tesla, Toyota, GM, Ford, Hyundai, and Nissan. This will allow them to make educated decisions on equipment needed in their own shop to perform repairs. This course is on-site at the NAPA Automotive Research Center in Canton, Ohio. Attendance requires ASE 6 certification, EPA ASE 609 certification, and at least 5 years of shop experience. The total cost is only $4,000 per attendee, which includes the four-day course, hotel, breakfast, lunch, and the PPE needed to perform the services. Now, if you're a gold-certified auto care, you can use your gold marketing funds to offset the cost. Hey, don't miss out on this invaluable opportunity to advance your team skills and ensure your shop is EV-ready. Contact the NAPA Training Service Center at 800-292-6428 to secure your spot.
Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice, and having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NapaTracks. That's NapaTracs.com.
I want to get into measuring because I think that's a real struggle for people down the line. But I believe Six Sigma Lean uses the words process mapping because I did a little research and I have that in front of me. And that reminds me of why the battery chargers are there, why they moved oil filters around, you know. And when I think of that, and workflow is really big and the, you know, software that's helping us. So now there's not only workflow screens at our counter, at our service counter, the workflow screens are in the back sometimes with the shop manager. But I've walked into shops where the screen is like an 80-inch screen. And I says, why is it so big? Because now everybody can see it. You know, they had kind of a square four-bay operation, and it was kind of up in the center. And if not, where do you think some specialists in the bays are going? They're walking over to the small 30-inch screen so they can actually see what's going on. But instead of making that...
Which takes time.
Yeah, instead of taking that walk, make it an 80-inch screen. So it's these little tiny things. Just, oh, I didn't think of that. Wow. And so the process mapping of... Wouldn't it be cool to take the camera, take a picture every 2 or 3 seconds in the shop, and then play it back and says, why did this guy walk 10 miles today? Think about it.
The ability to look out into the shop and see what's happening and then have the presence of mind to ask, why is that happening? I'll give you an example. I was in a shop. I work closely with this owner in operational process areas. But before I really started doing that, I was working on their communication system and spending time at the shop and really just looking around, seeing the way that people work. And of course, I've got this process mind that doesn't ever shut off. So I saw a technician sitting on his little portable stool and just kind of had this ho-hum look on his face. This is an A-tech, right? You want to keep these guys busy. So I had just made this comment, you know, kind of like a slow day. You know, that kind of thing. And he just shook his head and I'm like, oh, what are you doing? You know, it was the why question. Why are you sitting there? Basically without asking why you're sitting there. And it was just like, oh, I'm waiting on the, you know, the approval and whatever. And the service manager is, you know, three estimates deep, all of these things. So here's this A-tech sitting there, not able to produce because of a process error. He knew what he was doing and he knew why he was basically on pause. So now this is an opportunity to go talk to the service advisor and ask what's happening here. What your A-tech just told me is you're three estimates deep and it could be another hour before you're even talking to this customer. So we go down the process, just simply looking out and understanding why is somebody moving from point A to point B? And do they understand, you know, do I understand as the owner or the person responsible, you know, as the thought leader in this environment, why they're doing that? Can we address that area of inefficiency? Why is this technician just sitting here? Do we have the work? Yeah, we have the work. He's just waiting on an approval. What can we do to streamline that? So that led into a whole area of process analysis that said, what can we do to actually compress the time from inspection to approval? And we were able to pilot a program and drive greater efficiency in leveraging additional resources within the organization to compile the estimate, take the inspection, compile the estimate, get that to the customer, and minimize that time, even affect the parts ordering process. So from the time that the inspection is complete, we get that back to the service advisor. They prepare the estimate and order the parts. Then call the customer. Those parts are already on the way. Now we've compressed the timeline because we have additional resources able to complete that process. And we've also moved forward the implementation of our vendor process to get those parts in. So now this drives a lot of efficiency. Ultimately, it keeps our A-tech busy. And then who's the end customer is our actual customer. They get their vehicle on time or ahead of time. So we have the opportunity to wow them instead of delay them. These are the things that when we talk about process, a simple question can turn into this, like, I had no idea that we were waiting on getting three estimates complete before we keep my A-tech busy.
Who said I had no idea?
The owner.
The owner. Okay. And again, let's go back to manage by walking around or, you know, having those daily huddles which we can expose a lot of this stuff. And when I'm thinking of the word measurement, because it's very difficult for people, how do I measure that? My God, bay or technician efficiency for the hours that they spend, or that bay can actually produce revenue. That's not hard to figure that out. David, I got to believe one of the biggest, most important takeaways from this is to start having and question your people in your daily huddles. How often every day do you think you're standing around? Now, a lot of it has to do with pay. Person's on salary, they don't give a damn. But if it's a hybrid pay system where they get paid X, but they earn because of these other measures that they have, meaning that you've got to contribute, be productive. You walk into businesses and their counters, they have a CSR, customer service rep, that's greeting the customer and starting up tickets. But a lot of the heavy work is done behind curtains, or, you know, behind the counter, where people don't get interrupted so much that they can really, really hammer it out.
You've touched on something that I would call key performance indicators. And we use KPIs within the industry. We use that in process engineering as well. And I think throughout the industry, I see a lot of owners and managers that understand KPIs, and they can go into their shop management system, perhaps, or whatever they're using for reporting, and pull out ARO. They can pull out any number of various metrics. And I would challenge them to say, do we understand what levers you pull as an owner or manager that influences those KPIs? I think that's where the wheels begin to come off the bus, is taking the fact that I can access a metric or a measurement and know, okay, I know this number. I know my numbers. I know my ARO. I know my car count. I know these things. And then do I also know which levers I can pull that influence these? And how do I learn these things? Well, again, I go out into the shop. I spend time observing. And if I have in the back of my mind, I want to watch for key behavior in the shop, or I want to just occasionally ask questions. The morning huddle is a great time to do that. If you're not having a morning huddle, please do that. Stay in tune with the people in the shop. And if you are having that, in addition to the morning huddle, are there moments or opportunities throughout the day to walk around? If you're managing, you know, there's this idea of walk around management. It's as applicable in our industry and in automotive repair as it is in corporate America, where walk around management is common in a lot of organizations. This becomes important. And why do we want to do that? Well, we want to walk around to understand and take the pulse and stay in touch with what is happening, so that I'm not just sitting in my office pretending that everything's great and everything's moving along just fine. And I look at my KPIs on my SMS and I feel like, yep, we're doing great. But all the while, we have these potential areas of missed opportunity. So as I'm out engaging, aware of the workflow and the process, now I can apply these simple process tools. If I can leave your listener, Carm, with the idea that process doesn't have to be scary, it just has to be talked about, then we're all moving the needle here.
This is about sustainable improvements to the business, and it's an objective, it's a goal, it's a must-do, it's a responsibility. I've said in the past, and I think this episode is helping justify when I say, get your antenna up, Mr. Owner, get your intuition connected to your antenna, and manage by walking around, or walk around management. And when you see the data that you as an owner need to understand and know and say, I'm not sure what this really means, or why isn't it as good as it was last month, et cetera, then going out with your observation antenna out, you usually can find a problem. And a lot of it is if it's a company that's already got their systems down, they've got some great processes, a lot of people put them up and online, it doesn't mean that because we did this last year, that it doesn't need to be looked at again. Well, we added a new piece of equipment. We added another bay. We have a new person from the outside just joining us. Someone from a dealer came in. They have mentality of process that, oh, that's how we did it over there. And sometimes things break down. It's almost like the maintenance of a vehicle. It has to be done.
It very much has to be done. Process analysis and improvement is a cyclical process. I'm using the word process to define process, right? So in Six Sigma, DMAIC, I mentioned that earlier, define, measure, analyze, improve, control. control puts us not into status quo. It puts us into the next phase of define. So we're going to go back to the beginning. We're going to understand what we do. We're going to measure that, improve this process by making data-driven decisions. And ultimately, we get into a control phase. Well, control just means we're operationally working at our new level, right? So we were working here. Now we're going to raise the bar. We've made data-driven decisions. We've improved our process. Everybody's on board. We know what we're doing. We know why we're doing it. And we know who feeds what I'm doing and who benefits from what I'm doing, right? The supplier and customer. Now in control, we're going to come back to the beginning. So we're going to do this process, this new improved process for 30, 60, 90 days, and then go back to the measure side of it, right? Are we actually realizing these results? Has our process improvement proven, or have we introduced something that was a variable we didn't identify? Because we know what it should look like, now we know what a defect is or what abnormal is. But this is a circular process. In my opinion, this is never a one and done. We're never going to just do something, say, check, I have my book now, and good. When somebody asks me if I have my SOPs or my process is defined, yep, I've got it. This becomes a part of how we work and how we run our businesses.
I love the words perpetual loop.
Yeah.
It describes just what you said, that you need, it's almost like once you get done either reviewing or creating a process, and now I'm just going to throw a number out. You got 40 of them out there because of all these different types and styles of situational jobs, responsibilities. It's, oh, wow, we got this done. Whoops. You may have to go back and visit something you did 3 months ago because of a change in the business. You may have to go back because one of the brainiacs in the back says, this isn't working anymore. We got a new piece of equipment. We have some new technology that shortens that loop, if you will, in going from step A to step C. Now we don't need B. And I love your point, this whole, it's like paying attention to KPIs in finance as an owner. Almost needs to be someone anointed to be the process person. And I'll bet you can find someone in the company. Now, if you're a 3 or 4 bay shop, it's not going to happen. You own it. You're the owner.
You are the owner. You're the process owner and the business owner.
I mean, I know there's people with, you know, shop foremen, shop managers, area managers. It's almost like their responsibility needs to get inside. But if an area manager is managing 3 or 4 stores each, and, you know, it's a 6 or 8, 10 store chain, they need to work together. Someone may identify this. Our building is a little different size, a little different format. We have long bays instead of square bay. You know, it's like, oh, this doesn't work in this particular place, and it may work somewhere else. Thank you for bringing it up. And you talk about winning the war. You know, processes, they win wars. Policies win wars against yourself and the competition and the marketplace.
You brought up a super important point right now, and I'm glad you did, because you talked about change management. The idea, take an MSO, and the idea that, okay, that you'll run into this, right? Where somebody says that process works for them, but it doesn't work for us. And let me tell you all the reasons why that won't work here. It's a little bit of not from my camp mentality, right? And this is why early on we talked about, you know, bringing in the people involved in the process. These might be subject matter experts. They might be key contributors. They might be individual process owners within the MSO environment. Like, who's the foreman at location one? And who's the foreman at location two? And are they all part of this? Because almost without exception, a business process is going to be portable from one location to the second location to the third location. When people are on board with that, and change management is super important. So this is now where I want to bring in my subject matter experts and, you know, I'll call them local process owners to be part of this so that we understand. Ultimately, they're going to be charged with taking what we learn and what we know about process execution back to their local, you know, managing that and implementing it, because we don't want people, this is a big defect, area of defect, where we have people say, okay, this process was built for that location. It doesn't work here because of XYZ, so I'm not going to adopt it. And then without even saying, I'm going to check out, they've checked out. Without effective and proper change management, we don't have the ability to, you know, implement, maintain, and manage control across multiple locations in certain cases. So this comes back to really making people understand that they own this. If there is variability from one location to another location, that's okay, but that can be accounted in our process documentation. But we have to know why. We can't just have somebody say, that won't work here because, if they can articulate why and understand, is it actually different or is it the same, but because you have 7,000 square feet and this location has 2,500 square feet, you think it won't work? Or can we actually drive greater benefit because of these variables? This is important. Change management is important as our organization is larger and we have 10, 20 locations. Getting those area managers, the location managers, the shop foremen from each of those locations part of this becomes that much more important because now they have that sense of ownership. And when people own their piece of the picture, they're ready to go back now and engage and make that change real at their location.
Thank you for that. Change management. Look, I want to sum up the episode with this one particular concept, and that is over the 10 years that I've been podcasting and getting to know so many people, you mentioned MSO, multi-shop operations, and people wanting to scale. What I learned about 8 years ago, so how was that store number two? We never had our processes and systems down. Well, how did store three go? It wasn't as good because we never fixed them. And then we finally got slapped upside the head, found an accountability partner, a coach. We got our stuff together. Now we're at 10 stores, but we're stupid. We grew without any disciplines. We grew without any systems and processes. And those are the people that would say, oh my God, David, you know, Six Sigma, Lean, it's so important. Even if you have a one-up store operation, you'll find out how much more efficient. It's all about the satisfied, the client experience. Done. At the end of the day, you want a wheel to come off? Oh, how many wheels have come off down the road, three or four blocks away? It's because you don't have a process and a system. So cover in a few remaining minutes the importance that you can't scale if you don't have great systems processes.
It's the practice ground. So we never despise small beginnings, right? Everybody starts at the beginning. You know, some of the biggest shop owners that I know today that are, you know, 20 plus locations, they started renting a bay. It's funny you say that because I've talked with those owners too, that, you know, we joke that adding the second store is the hardest until you add the third store. Because now we really expose the inefficiency. What we're saying from a process standpoint is we're really exposing the defects because I don't know the process. I can't measure it. I don't know what normal looks like. So I'm not able to identify abnormal. And then what happens? The oil leaks out within 3 miles of the store or the wheel comes off on the highway. These are not just dissatisfying factors that affect a customer. They're potentially dangerous considerations. We want our customers happy, and of course we want them safe. So we start at the beginning and understand that today I'm going to look and identify a process area to understand better. That's really what this comes down to, in my opinion, Carm. If I take a moment, and I mean, a lot of shops that are having the morning huddle, there are different names for these that are used throughout the industry. Those are just conscious decisions that we're going to allocate this period of time each day. We're going to accomplish something as a group. Similarly, in process analysis and process improvement, I'm the owner of a shop. I'm going to make a conscious decision that each day I'm going to evaluate what's going on around me and try to better understand why people are doing what they're doing. People will gravitate, in a lot of cases, to a path of least resistance in their own mind. And that doesn't mean that they're doing something effectively or efficiently. And this is where we see that rapid toggling of process execution. So when I make that decision, I'm the thought leader for the business. And that just means that I need to stay in front of what's happening and evaluate a process area, make a decision to talk with the people that are involved with that, understand who's doing what are the inputs and the outputs of a particular process. Ultimately, I'd like to document that and measure this so that we can make some improvements around that. This begins to train a pattern of behavior. And you'll actually, my feeling is that owners that make this commitment to decision will begin to get energized by process improvement. I've seen it happen before. They are intrigued, like, I can actually cut 7 minutes off of a particular service. Well, who benefits from that? Certainly our shop, we have more throughput capability, right? The customer potentially getting their vehicle back sooner. My technician, who is flat rate versus salary, they're going to benefit from doing something 7 minutes faster because we've defined some efficiency. We have a discernible, measurable process that is ideally without defect. So my customer safety is elevated and I can stand by my commitment and guarantee that they're going to be satisfied with coming to us and they'll come back again. So these are all of the things that happen and this begins to grow. I do feel that the owners and process owners will begin to get encouraged and excited about this. And as you drive efficiency in your shops, as you drive reduction of defects, your service advisors become more happy, your technicians, your CSR, the managers, and you have growth potential. It's intoxicating, for a guy like me who's driven by process. I call it my love language, Carm. We talk process, right? So it really becomes invigorating. And I think that it's like the challenge. I'm going to go find something. I'm going to ask an extra question today just to hear somebody's response. Do they know why they're doing something?
Unbelievable. Thank you so much. A couple of my big takeaways is, of course, ask why. The rapid toggling is unbelievable. The loop, the perpetual loop that we get into, needing to establish normal and processes without defect. Wow. David Boyd, a Lean Six Sigma black belt, worked at GE years ago, which is where all this came to you from. But you had the brain that was perfect for it because you eat and live processes. David Boyd from callinbound.com, a great phone company, one of the sponsors on the Aftermarket Radio Network. This was enlightening. Thank you so much. Now, if you, listener, learned anything, please go implement it. And whatever you do, please, please do it well.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.